Good morning and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Ontex's Interim Results Conference Call. This call is being recorded. Today's call will be hosted by Jacques Pernaud, Chief Finance Officer. Following the opening comments, an interactive Q&A session will be available. A copy of today's announcement and presentation is available on www.ontexglobal.com. I would like to remind everyone that safe harbor statements apply to this presentation and the subsequent Q&A session. I would now like to hand the call over to Jacques Pernaud. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. So, good afternoon, and for some of you, good morning. Today, here on the call, I will have with me my colleague, Thierry Navarre, our COO, who will be available together with me to answer your questions after the presentation. So, as you know, we have made our IPO end of June, and this earnings call is the first of what we call Ontex New Era. This makes it quite special and gives me even more pleasure to take you through what I would call a very good set of robust results. These results are perfectly illustrating the sustainable, profitable growth story of Ontex. Before going through the highlights of Q2 and H1 results, I will first make a link back to the IPO and, as a reminder, I will review some of the key messages we presented to you at the time. For the newcomers on the call, if any, it will position better Ontex. First of all, an important point. In this call, we want to provide information to both equity and bond stakeholders. And as we have one set of documents, we present the Ontex Group figures and provide a reconciliation to Ontex 4 in the appendix for the special attention of our bondholders. On top, we also provide the Ontex 4 interim financial statements in the earnings report. And as a last reminder, Ontex 4 is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Ontex Group and is the entity through which our bonds were issued. So now let's go, I would say, swiftly through some slides which position Ontex specificities and strengths. So I would ask to move to slide number 5, where you have the description of what we call Ontex today. It's a slide which we used during the IPO and the roadshow. You see on the top left that Ontex is a pure player in what we call the hygiene solutions and is playing in all three categories. All these categories are very attractive thanks to underlying demographics and potential for further adoption rate. So that's what you see on the top left. Then you see that Ontex is also playing in a broad geographical area. So we have a large geographical spread with a strong Western European base, which is complemented by an increasing exposure to growth markets like Eastern Europe and Middle East Africa. Third characteristic, and which sometimes is not always well known, we are a brand player. We have almost 40% of Ontex's own brands and 60% of retailer brands. This is very important, and obviously it's evolving as we are increasing step by step the share of Ontex brands. Regarding our customer base, we have blue chip customer base. We have all the top retailers, but it's also quite diversified, as our biggest customers represent each around 6% of our turnover in 2013. So it's well-spread base, well-spread geographies, well-spread base, and active in all three categories. Moving on to the slide number 6. What do we see here? I would say that essentially it shows that Ontex is very agile. How we do that, and we win by adapting our model to where we play. This chart has been called the S-curve, and in essence, it shows that we adapt our offering to market maturity and consumer needs. Quickly going through, if you start on the left side, you see that in emerging markets like Middle East Africa, where the retail is either non-existent or in its first development, we offer exclusively Ontex brands. On the opposite, moving to the right, you see the mature markets, where the retail is powerful and sophisticated. And there, we exclusively offer retail brands, avoiding to disturb the relationship with the retailer by offering our own brands. And in the middle, in growth markets, what we call accelerating markets, we adapt to the evolution of the trade with an offering which is a mix of own brands and retailer brands. Finally, if you look at the far right of the graph, you see healthcare, where we also have specific approach to fulfill the needs of the institutional channel. With Ontex own brands, it's mainly branded, and we have also different go-to-market routes like home delivery. So that shows again the agility of Ontex to adapt. Moving on to slide number 7, we find here what we call our growth algorithm or growth model, and you see it has two components. On the left side, the market growth. On the right side, the fact that Ontex is outperforming the market. On the market growth, we come to a 3-4%, and this is in fact a weighted average of the growth in the various markets where we compete. And as you can see, the two key drivers there are demographic trends and adoption rates. On the right side, you see Ontex outperformance. And how does it come? In fact, we are surfing what I would call the wave of the retailer brand penetrations. And on top, we are gaining share. And we are tearing up, selling more premium products. Now, in order to close the IPO reminder, I'd like to highlight some of our key competitive advantage, which are coming from our scale. And for that, you can have a look at the slide number 8. I was talking about scale, and here you see that we are 2.7 times larger than the next retailer brand competitor. Obviously, it gives us an advantage. First, in manufacturing, where we have greater flexibility, which means we can meet the complexity of the retailer brands, we can meet our customer needs and their geographical expansion. It also obviously gives us some leverage and some cost advantage. Then on quality of products, we are matching or even surpassing the A brand's quality in all tests which are happening, be it lab tests or be it customer panels. Third point, innovation, which is very important, where compared to our retailer brand competitors, we have a scale advantage too. We have 3 research centers, 1 per category, and it allows us to be not only a fast follower, but also come with first in innovation. These 3 characteristics or capabilities are in the DNA of the company. On top of that, we are also reinforcing some other capabilities. We are investing in brand and customer management and expertise, and we are also investing in procurement. As you will hear later, by the way, this investment in procurement capabilities is already delivering to the bottom line. So, now moving to slide 9, let's get away from the IPO reminder and say some words on a summary of the Q2 and H1 results. What we can say is that during June IPO, during all the presentations, we insisted on the fact we believe momentum is very important in business. And in this respect, we can say that our Q2 is a strong quarter, both in top line and in adjusted EBITDA, in line with IPO expectations, by the way. You see, we have 3 bullet points, starting with top lines, our revenue. Our revenue are at almost 410 million, which is an all-time high for Ontex. In quarter 2, we deliver a like-for-like growth of 7.3%. This like-for-like is, in fact, what could also be called organic at constant currency. And as you will see throughout the whole presentation, we have a robust performance across the board. So it's not only one division or one category, it's across the board. Then talking about profitability and our adjusted EBITDA, we see that in quarter two, we deliver 11%, fully organic, as Serenity was already fully consolidated in quarter 2, 2013. Our EBITDA margins at 12.1 is showing a 58 basis point increase year on year. And this is worth reminding that during IPO, we mentioned and we gave more or less an expectation, a target. We saw an opportunity to increase our margin, our EBITDA margin, by 30 to 40 basis points a year. This 58 basis point of Q2 is obviously higher than the model, and it's coming from operating leverage, efficiencies. Our efficiency programs are delivering, but it's also a little bit helped by OPEX phasing. That's why we still think that our 30 to 40 basis point guidance midterm is the right one. On the page, you see also we talk about cash flow. In quarter one, in May, when we presented our quarter one results, we explained we had additional working capital consumption due to inventory buildup, receivable increase linked to VAT in Italy, and a change of mix of customers. And this impacted our free cash flow in quarter one. In quarter two, our free cash flow has increased year on year as we have stabilized our working capital consumptions. And I will come in more details on the actions which have happened later on in the presentation. I'm also very pleased to tell you that, as announced during the IPO, we have improved our financial structure drastically. We have now a pro forma leverage of 3 times, Also, our financial liquidity has improved, and at end of June, we had 140 million available. This gives you a summary of the results and the performance. We're now gonna be able to move into some more details. Flipping over to the slide number 11. You have here a table with the key metrics of our P&L. I'm not gonna go through all the figures in this table. I will only point to some elements. In fact, you can see that all the metrics are pointing towards our ability to deliver sustainable, profitable growth, and this in line with the ambitions we declared in June. Here, I just gonna emphasize two elements. First, the like-for-like top line growth of 7.3% in Q2 and even 8.4% for H1, and again, ahead of our midterm growth algorithm, which is 4%-6%. Second, I'd like to emphasize the leverage we deliver. When you look at adjusted EBITDA, it is up 11% in quarter two, and again, this is a purely organic performance. If we make the correction and get it at constant currency, we deliver 13.3% increase EBITDA, which is quite remarkable performance. Now, after the P&L, I'd like to focus more on the top line. If you go to the slide 12, you'll see it's we first go through the group performance, and then in the next slide, we will go through each division separately. On the top right, you see a graph representing our H1 sales bridge. There, it appears clearly that our top line is essentially driven by volume growth, whereas price mix is offsetting partly the FX impact. It's again, very much what we already presented. Worth also noting and keeping in mind that our pricing activity in Middle East, Africa, and growth markets has been higher in quarter two than it had been in quarter one. Also, that in retailer brands, there was limited promotion activity across the board in H1. In fact, as we will say even, and you'll see later, we expect that to resume in H2, compensating partly for the lower impact of KC withdrawal. In this bridge, you see acquisition, and it's obviously linked to Serenity. It was Serenity impacting Q1, as it was consolidated as of Q2 2013. On the bottom graph, you see our like-for-like growth progression in each quarter. You see that we have got now six quarters in a row of like-for-like growth, which illustrate perfectly, really completely the sustainability of our growth. Our growth is not a one-off. It's already six quarters in a row that we have like-for-like growth. Now we could move to the divisions, going on slide 13, with mature market retail. As you can see, with 56% of our reported group sales, mature retail is by far our biggest division. With respectively 7.1% and 8.2% like-for-like sales growth in Q2 and H1, it is continuing to see strong growth. We could say that it's not a mature market type of growth, it's almost an emerging market type of growth. Where does it come from? In fact, we see a continuing growth of retailer brands. As I said, we are more or less surfing the wave there. But on top, we are winning as a key partner with retailers. And a good example is what we deliver and what we do in Poland. So I would say for mature market, the key word is momentum. And for H2, we expect, as I already said, increased promotional activity in retailer brands. We will also continue to roll out innovations like we have started to do with our SuperCore product, SuperCore 2. So now, after mature markets, let's say some words about Middle East Africa. Slide 14. We can say that Middle East Africa deliver high single-digit growth in a challenging environment. So we deliver 8.7 like-for-like, which is a good performance, but as you see, which is a little bit a slower growth than what we have seen in the beginning of the year. Looking more in detail, we can say that we win market share in our biggest market, which is very important, so in Turkey. But we are also impacted by political instability in other markets. And, you know, you just think about what you see on television during the last weeks, like what's happening in Iraq, for example, and you can see that we are, in fact, facing in some markets very strong instability. Here, in this region, we can say that our geographical diversification helps us. On the other hand, looking at H2, we plan to accelerate marketing activities and deploy some innovations. Now moving into growth markets, it's on slide 15, sorry. Growth market is at the same time our smallest and our fastest growing division. With like-for-like growth in quarter two of 26.6%, like-for-like, so accelerating versus Q2, which was already remarkable with 24.6, coming to deliver 24.6 in H1. So here, and it's rather important, it's really worth mentioning that despite a rather chaotic geopolitical environment, Russia continues to deliver double-digit growth, benefiting obviously from local manufacturing. Finally, the last division, healthcare, 26% of our reported sales, so quarter of our business. Healthcare, as you can see, is accelerating in quarter two with 3.1 like-for-like growth, slightly outperforming a low single-digit market. Serenity is now fully integrated 1 year after acquisition and performing on track. We are also gaining contracts in France and getting renewals in Italy. So we are pretty satisfied with the performance of the division. But it's worth mentioning that we feel also a growing pressure on the government spendings. And this could impact the growth rate of the healthcare channel in the midterm. A different view on slide 17 is the category view. And here the message is growth across the board, obviously with baby care leading. I would like to take your attention more specifically on Adult Inco. We are very happy with the Adult Inco performance, I must say, both in healthcare and in mature retail. In mature retail, we deliver a 10% like-for-like growth in adult incomes. And so you see the acceleration we have seen in quarter two versus Q1 to deliver H1 at 4.2%. On fem care and also in incontinence, we are now rolling out innovations, so in both categories. So looking forward in H2. This, for me, finished the review of the top line. And I think you have seen in the previous slides that we are delivering sustainable growth. Let's now talk about profitability. During the IPO, as I said, we indicated we see the opportunity to grow EBITDA margin over time by 30 to 40 basis points a year, thanks to efficiencies, procurement, and revenue growth management, which means pricing, account management, and tiering up. In quarter two and in H1, with respectively 58 basis points and 84 basis point improvement, we have delivered ahead of our model, and it was thanks to our active cost management, but also, as I said, some OPEX phasing, mainly in the marketing, where we had phased the activities more towards H2. Obviously, and in order to reassure those who could be worried, we are very cost-conscious company. So when we say we're going to have an increase in our marketing, we do not plan to spend in total of the year a higher percentage as what we had agreed. So we're not going to start splashing the cash, just to be clear. Now, more specifically, in this performance we have delivered, we can say that our procurement and hedging performance has allowed us to mitigate efficiently the raw material cost impact, which is quite remarkable and which not all companies have succeeded in delivering. And by the way, we expect to continue to mitigate efficiently raw material cost impact in H2. You have to know that for raw material, as well as for FX, so currency, we have in place what we call rolling hedging policies, which means we don't wait until year-end to all of a sudden try to hedge ourselves or protect ourselves. We do it as we go through the year, step by step, in a rolling approach. Now moving on to slide 19, we present you the non-recurring costs. You have all the details. You see where we have spent the money. But I would like here to draw your attention specifically to the treatment of IPO costs. It's important because only part will actually hit our P&L. So the total amount of IPO cost of 46.5 million has been split between costs relating to new capital, which are reported as equity, and it's for an amount of 25.4 million, and costs relating to costs relating to existing capital, which are then reported as non-recurring costs and are hitting our P&L for 21.1 million. It's also very important to pass the message that all IPO costs have been booked in H1, even if only part which is basically 30 million, have been already paid in H1. Finally, and in order to make our pro forma leverage computation, which we will see on slide 21, we have offset the cash, which is still on our account, but is dedicated to the payment of the IPO cost. And that's because we wanted to present a completely fair picture of our leverage. Moving now on to slide 20, we have the cash flow. And there, as I said, we see in H1 a working capital consumption. This is coming from our quarter one, and it's stabilized in quarter two. As I explained in the Q1 earnings call in May, this working capital consumption in Q1 comes from different factors. First, we had an inventory build-up. First, on raw materials, we had done some stockpiling on raw materials in remote countries. And this is a precautionary measure. So it's in order to be on the safe side and be sure we're not going to be in missing, let's say, raw materials due to import problems. Second, we have also returned to the optimal baby diaper stock levels, and this in order to ensure supply chain efficiency and optimal customer service level. Second reason for working capital consumption in Q1 was the customer mix impact on receivables, which means we have had more sales to customers with longer payment terms. And finally, we have had a big increase of VAT receivable in Italy, which we said at the time we were busy addressing. I can say that these three elements have been addressed in quarter two, which is why you see working capital consumption being even, it's not a consumption, it's a positive one. First, we have the inventories are now at their optimal level. Second, we have concluded new factoring agreements in line with our business growth. And third, we have implemented VAT-free warehouse in Italy, which means we have been able to, I would say, stop the bleeding as of 1st of July. So all of these have been addressed in quarter two. All in all, important to keep in mind that our working capital stays in line with our 12% net sales target as indicating during IPO. If you look at the cash tax line, then you see that we are low in Q2, and it's just a phasing issue. Then on CapEx, our CapEx is exactly in line with our investment plan, which was initially phased towards H2. And the guideline of 3% net sales is confirmed for the full year. As indicated previously, the IPO has allowed us to strengthen our capital structure. We have now a leverage of 3x. And as highlighted in the previous slide, we come to that even offsetting the cash for IPO cost. This improved situation has already been recognized by Moody's with an improved rating and a positive outlook comment. Last thing worth noting is that we have also paid 8 million of Serenity earned out, and despite all of this, we have strong liquidity position at 140 million, end of June. On slide 21, you can see the computation of our net debt and how we come to our pro forma leverage of 3x. So now we can move to the last slide of the presentation, which is slide 23, and about the outlook. I would say that looking forward, the message is we are confident. On the top line, we are well positioned to capitalize on the favorable trends seen early in the year. That's for the top line. On the margin side, our efficiency programs, coupled with action to mitigate raw material costs, are delivering day in, day out. So we are there also really confident. At the same time, as we said, we are implementing the upscaling of our sales, marketing, R&D, and support functions with a shift into H2. So we were talking about OPEX phasing. So that's a reality too. Our CAPEX program, weighted towards H2, is on track also. And finally, as discussed during the roadshow in the IPO, we are actively reviewing refinancing options in the next quarters. We are seeing banks and so preparing the file. This, some words on outlook, ending the presentation part of the call. I would like to thank you for your attention, obviously. And now Thierry and myself are open to answer your questions. In order to have this in an organized way, I will hand over to the operator who will manage the questions flow. Operator, up to you.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. A voice prompt on your phone line will indicate when your line is open. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will pause for a moment to allow everyone to signal. We will now take our first question from Fernand de Boer of Petercam. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, good afternoon. It's Fernand de Boer, Petercam. I have three questions, if I may. First, on Middle East Africa, on the slowdown you saw in the second quarter, what's your feeling for, let's say, the second half there? Do you take additional measures to return to the double-digit growth? And could you also say somewhat about the Russia growth in Russia, maybe going forward after the ban coming in? And then on the phasing of the cost, because if you compare the second quarter with the first quarter, you will see already a step up of the cost. So could you quantify a little bit the step up of cost in the second half compared to the first half? Thank you.
So I think we will probably share with Thierry the answer to the question. I think Thierry will take the first two, which are very much on top line, and I'll answer the cost. So Thierry, do you want to...
Yep. So good afternoon and good morning to everybody. So first one regarding the Middle East and Africa. So... yes, we see a slowdown on the Q2 there. Actually, the slowdown is mainly driven by the instability in the regions that's really triggered the last couple of months. And on the other side, we've got in these regions, let's say the big engine of the regions, which is the Turkey part, which is doing pretty well and getting market share on a consistent basis. So going forwards, we definitely do not see too much concerns over there. when you look at the countries where the instabilities are, these are things that we would see going away and are still representing today a small part of the MEA. One of the big countries out of, when you look at Turkey on one side, the other big countries which were hit by a little bit of instability, but it's on an ad hoc basis, was Algeria, where the elections have really triggered a lot of worries around, and there has been a very flat period during, let's say, a quarter in that region. So that's for MEA. Regarding Russia growth, Russia is, in the, relative to the growth market divisions, an important market, but relative to the group remains a very small contributor. Up to now, we haven't suffered at all from all the sanctions. We are also producing locally for a part of our volumes, which also helps in case in the near future or medium future sanctions would have an impact on our type of product, but it's definitely not the case today. And Russia is actually one of the key drivers of the growth of the growth market division.
Yeah. Should I?
If you take the third one, Jack?
On the cost, I would say we don't really give the too much of a guidance for looking. So what I say is, if you look at our cost base, it's more a phasing. So if you look at the percentage of the cost versus our net sales, we do not plan to be very different from previous years. Second element is what will happen. As I said, we have some marketing activities, but it's, again, not starting to splash the cash. And we have some increase in central functions with R&D, sales, marketing. The type of increase of cost you see in quarter two is mainly on the line what's called others, which is their bundling, different type of cost, of which the hedging costs. And so a difference between Q1 and Q2 comes from the evolution of the different currencies and so of the results we get on hedging, which is on this line. So on the typical operational costs, be it on sales, marketing, G&A, there will be a moderate increase. And because I guess it's linked to your view on EBITDA margin and where we would end up, as I said, we still reconfirm that our views expressed during IPO about a 30 to 40 basis point yearly increase is the right midterm target. Apparently, or we could say also that 2014 is a little bit atypical and is probably on the high side.
Okay, thank you very much for this.
Yeah.
As a reminder, to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from Rosie Edwards of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon. Three questions from me. Firstly, you talked about an increase in promotional activity from retailers in the second half. Can you just sort of run through how that will impact your business? I am assuming that these promotions would be funded by the retailers, and therefore I would assume not much activity, perhaps some volume gains for you, but apart from that, muted. Can you confirm that? Secondly, I mean, you've talked on your outlook slide about looking at refinancing options, but can you give any other detail surrounding that? And then finally, you talked about increasing in your factoring agreements. Again, any additional information you can provide would be very helpful. Thanks.
Thank you, Rosie. So here I think we're also going to split the questions. Thierry will take the mechanics and the approach on promotions in retailer brands, and I'm going to take the refinancing and the factoring.
So on this first one, definitely the there is a plan to see an uplift in promotions in the second half. In the retailer brands, they are funding the promotions, but definitely promotional activity is triggering an increase in volumes and a further increase in the penetrations of retailer brands. So what do we see in there is we expect an increase of volumes through the increase of the promotional activities in the second half. So this is in that sense that it is impacting us, not from the funding point of view, which is on the side of the retailer itself.
Okay.
That's thank you, Thierry. So refinancing, so as I said, we are starting to build a file. As we had discussed in during the IPO, at this stage, the assumptions we had in the IPO are still valid, which means that we're going to do it in the next quarters. What could I share with you on top of this? I mean, it's ongoing. We see different banks, and we are open to different, let's say, type of setup, which could bundle bonds, loans. So we are expecting and we some creative thinking and help from the different banks. And they are quite, let's say, helpful there. On the factoring, in fact, what we have done, and it was already announced in May, during the IPO we mentioned it, we have negotiated an additional factoring of around 30 million in Italy. And this has been already implemented. It was end of May. So that's the factoring agreement I was referring to.
Sorry, was that part of the Serenity? Or linked to Serenity?
Or is this... You could say it's linked to Serenity in a sense that our business is increasing. And, you know, we are selling with the Italian NHS, which has rather long payment terms, which means that we are, which means that we are financing it through factoring. And here we have got an excellent agreement.
Okay, so is the total agreement still 120 million?
No.
Was it 150?
I would say so. If I say a summary of the factoring, we have 123 million, which were already there, and now we have added 30 million, which means we are in the 135. It changes, you know, because we add things into our factoring. So we could say in the 135 range. And this is the amount we have put into factoring. Next, another concept would be for some of the contract, like the contract we have with BNP, we have there some lines, and these lines are at 150 million, of which we have only drawn part of it. So, but the amount we have drawn, and it's the same as the one we have already highlighted during the IPO, because nothing has changed since the IPO. We are now in the, I would say, roughly 135 million.
135, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
As a final reminder, ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question today, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We will now take a question from Julianne Martin of Aberdeen. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. Thanks for the call. Just one follow-up question on the previous question around the refinancing, if I may. You're saying your thinking right now is more or less in line with the time of the IPO and the prospectus. I could see in the prospectus that you were thinking about refinancing in the course of 2015, but by the sound of it, it feels like you could be targeting for something earlier than that.
So I would say, obviously, we are open to good suggestions, but our basic assumptions is to go in April 2015, because what we said during IPO is still valid now, which means that the penalty we have to pay for refinancing drops significantly in April 2015. Now, you never know if a great creative idea. So we obviously open to suggestions, but our basic assumption is still the same than it was during the IPO.
Okay, understood. So when basically when the first call of the unsecured notes becomes due, and when the penalty on the or the premium on the second call of the secured becomes due, April 15, yeah.
Exactly.
Understood. Exactly. Thank you.
Welcome.
Our next question comes from Eva Korogoga of UBS. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, good afternoon. I was wondering if Thierry could maybe share his thoughts a little bit on what's going on in the Inco market. You've obviously talked about a nice acceleration in mature retail in the quarter, and I was wondering whether that reflects that you're gaining lots of new contracts, whether that reflects that the market is getting more dynamic. Also, obviously, we've now seen P&G enter in markets like the UK, how you see that dynamic evolve. And then secondly, at the time of the IPO, you've obviously talked about your willingness to look at acquisition opportunities, and I was wondering if your thinking on those has evolved since then.
Yeah. Okay, when you look at the Inco market, first of all, you need to separate the institutional channels from the retail channels. As I said previously, in the institutional channel, you have a very, very tough market, which is really growing on the low single digits and being under pressure because of the government spending being really, really under scrutiny. And what you see in there is that the growth you don't see into healthcare, which is very, very moderate in healthcare, is actually you see on the other side, on the retail side, a very strong growth driven by two things. There is the demographic, obviously, and then you've got behind that the shift from the institutional channels into the retail channel. Because people not finding anymore the right product into the reimbursed channels in the healthcare sectors are going into the retails to find the right one in terms of performance or also comfort and discretion. So you've got really a shift towards retail in there. And we are, as Ontex, very well positioned in order to capture that. First of all, because of our positions into the Western Europe in the retail brands market where we are leading, with already the rest of the portfolio. So we are adding the Inco to the rest of the portfolios, and it's much easier to do for us on tech than most of the other competitors who have a portfolio which is much more reduced than ours. Also, together with the successes that we have demonstrated into other categories, we are placing ourselves as the best one to be able to provide the same success within co as well, within continents as well. So we've seen contract gains as well as organic growth into that that area. And to come back to what you mentioned regarding PNG entering, actually re-entering the sectors, because some years ago they tried to enter it, but then exited it. It was not a success, so it's another trial now. We see that as I would say as an opportunity for the market to get an increase or an acceleration of its growth. TNG is entering in that market, obviously on the branded side, mainly on the retail and not on the healthcare channel, and will come hopefully by also increasing the awareness around that category, where we still have a lot of potential for growth. It's a category which has not delivered its full potential so far, also because of the taboo around that type of product and also the knowledge of people of that type of product. So with PNG entering the game, it will bring some more dynamic into the market. And we don't see that as a threat on top of that, because the main target of KC is more SCA and the TENA brand of SCA rather than the retailer brands.
Thank you.
So, yeah. So I think your second point was about the acquisition and what we have in mind. So you can imagine we have had a lot to do with the IPO. As I said, we are now what we do, and it's done mainly through our CEO, is we are, let's say, reopening some of the files. And always, as we say, you remember, we have a very strict approach towards M&A with our strategic criteria, saying we won't privilege things which would be in the incontinence, which would be outside of Western Europe, and which would be branded. So we need to have at least two of these three criteria in order to start really looking at a file. And we have we continue to apply the same very disciplined approach. And we cannot obviously not start sharing names here, but obviously we have been resuming our approach on M&A, as we had said during the IPO. So in parallel, refinancing, obviously, is there. We're preparing refinancing, and we are also resuming M&A approach.
Thank you.
We will now take our final question from Alberto Lopez of JP Morgan. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello. Good afternoon. Two questions from me. First, you mentioned that you expect a growing pressure on from government spending impacting growth in healthcare division. Just to clarify, do you expect this pressure to increase in the future, or does the kind of low single-digit market growth already capture this pressure? And if you do expect more pressure, what sort of time frame are we speaking about? Could we see some additional coming already this year, or this is more kind of more mid-term event, 2015 post? And secondly, you stated during the presentation that you expect raw materials to increase during the third quarter. If you could perhaps elaborate what is driving this increase in the raw materials and what is the outlook for the key raw materials for the coming quarters, please? Thanks.
Thank you. So I think maybe Thierry is going to take the healthcare question, and then I will take the raw material one.
Yeah, well, on this subject, it's clear that the pressures on government spending is an actual thing. It's not something that will only come. It's already felt now And what we believe is that going forward, it will just cap the growth rates of the healthcare channel. So it will stay in the low single digit, and there will be much less opportunity to really increase that materially. And this being said, I just want to add one precision. What we see is that we've got a decrease in the spending. On the other side, when we look at the way we approach the business on Ontex, on the healthcare side, it does not mean for us a decrease in terms of the margins, because we do work on the product, we do work on cost-saving programs in a way that we're still in a dynamic of margins increase in the healthcare, but with a top line which is going to stay at the low single digits, but with the margins will be still maintained at the level where it is and continuing to increase.
So thank you, Thierry. So on raw materials, so what we say, we have to distinguish between the different raw materials. If we look at the fluff, as we said, on our side, we are fully covered, either through hedging or through agreement with the suppliers. But if you look at the indices, we have seen an increase. Again, now in July, we have had an increase, which doesn't hit us, but which is there in the market. Getting the general consensus, the consensus is that the fluff should decrease towards the end of the year. But again, we have been thinking about that for quite some months now, and we haven't seen happening. As I was saying, for us, we have continued to put in place our rolling hedging program, so we are already partly covered for 2015. So if you look at the superabsorbent, the last published index shows a decrease, which is good news, obviously. But as we already explained you, in our contracts, we have a mechanism which gives us a certain lag between the moment an index moves and the moment it hits us. Obviously, when the indices increase, we like it. When it decreases, we say that's a pity, it doesn't impact us immediately, but it's the same rule in both directions. So in this case, the decrease we have just seen in superabsorber is not going to impact our Q3, but is going to impact us, I would say, at the end of H2, so in our Q4. So these are, and then we see on others rather little movement. It is not, we don't see a huge volatility on the others. So the two main being fluff and superabsorbent. And this is why if we keep in mind our mitigation program, we say that we are confident that in our case raw material will have a very moderate impact for us.
Okay, thank you very much, both.
That will conclude today's Q&A session. I would now like to hand the call back to Mr. Pernod for any closing remarks. Please go ahead, sir.
So I want to thank all of you for your attention, and reiterate the comment I made at the beginning of the outlook, saying basically we are confident. Thank you, and have a nice day and a great weekend ahead of you. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
This concludes Ontex's Interim Results Conference Call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.